Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again and welcome. If you've got funny noises on the background of this one, it's a beagle chewing a rabbit's leg. The rabbit has deceased.
Long since.
But we're following on directly from last week because an extraordinary thing happened just as we finished recording, didn't it?
It was absolutely amazing. We are sitting in Maggie's garden next door to a field that's been freshly mown for hay. So the grass is lying in the field. And it's been put in little rows, as if it's going to be put through an old-fashioned baler, actually.
It is.
It's really lovely to see. Yeah, beautiful. Anyway, there we are, sitting next door to rows of drying grass. And suddenly, grass starts to rise up into the air and spin round. And it rose up into the air from about 15 foot away from us.
Yes.
Flying in little circles at sort of head height. And then the flying circles moved away from us in a straight line across the field until they got to a large ash tree on the other side of the field, where they disappeared.
And it was a whirlwind, wasn't it?
It was a little whirlwind.
Or tornado.
Well, Josh called it a dust devil. I phoned back the son who interrupted last week's podcast.
Josh starring in Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. Yeah.
Amazing.
So, no, it wasn't a devil. I wonder if it was taking some energy away that didn't need to be here.
Well, my immediate thought was that perhaps it had to do with the beagle wrangler.
Yes, maybe it was the beagle wrangler.
Maybe it was the beagle wrangler who had to run around to make sure we understood.
I had to run around the house and make sure the other beagle was still here because I thought it might have been the beagle wrangler because she'd gone away at that point.
No, but and instead she came back with the smuggest expression I've ever seen on her face.
And a bit of dead rabbit.
And a bit of dead rabbit, which is, yes, very long since dead. She clearly found it in the shrubbery somewhere.
Yes, delicious. Yeah. Very good. Apparently rabbit's ears with the fur on are preventatives of fleas and worms.
Yes, apparently something about the fur means that everything in their stomach gets attached to it or something.
Yeah.
And then scoured out when it takes its journey south.
Fair enough. Keep chewing, Desi.
I know, amazing. Very handy.
So, natural phenomena, strange things that happen like that. Things like barracuda turning up 20 miles away from where they're supposed to do and whirlwinds and strange things. Tell me about some of your experiences.
Well, I was just about to say, and you called me the witch. Wahaha! I'm not sure that things like that necessarily happen to me, Maggie.
Oh, they happen to me all the time.
Yes, I know they do. I don't know. Maybe my life is so consistently left field that I fail to notice these things as being extraordinary. But sitting here in this moment, I am unable to come up with anything at all.
Well, in which case, I'm just going to talk about, we saw that comet last night. I can't remember what it's called. It's got some strange Hugh News or something name. There's a comet in the sky underneath the plough at the moment. And by the time this is broadcast, it's probably gone, but it's underneath the saucepan part of the plough on the right, about 3 inches down as you look up. Millions of miles away.
I can understand.
And we went out last night to look at it. I've seen Halley's Comet a few years ago, and this one isn't coming back again for another 6,000 years, so it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I could see it with my naked eye. And
wow.
Then we just put binoculars on it. We've got good binoculars. And the privilege of looking at this living being. It's a piece of rock hurling through the air, but it's actually a living being. And I know that the first time I looked at the planets through a very good telescope, and Saturn was up, and I looked at it, and everybody else was going, oh, look at the rings, look at the rings. And I was going, it's looking back. Because all planets, yes, I'm sounding more witchy, but all planets have angelic aspects. That's one of the reasons why I love C.S. Lewis, and a lot of people I know don't, but his Out of the Silent Planets series about Earth and Venus and Mars all talk about each planet having its own Oyasa, which is its own god, like Gaia.
Right.
And the angels are known as Eldils. And there's these beautiful songs as the Oyasas of the planets come together in the solar system and work through the solar system. And there's a whole Adam and Eve story. And it's extraordinarily beautiful and very powerfully imagined. And it actually has led me to something I really wanted to ask you, because we talk about the divine, you talk about her, I talk about it or him or her or all of them. When you're talking about the great divine, are you talking about Gaia, the goddess of this planet, or are you talking about the great divine of the whole of creation? Please don't drink my tea, Beagle. Sorry.
I am talking about, well, I'm almost always, sometimes I might be talking about Gaia. I hope I've got enough clarity to always name when I'm talking about Gaia.
Mm.
When I'm talking about the divine, I would typically choose that expression because I mean the one who is present in and has created all and is the no thing behind, if you like, everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere and nowhere, baby. That's
okay.
Where it's at.
And it is genderless?
Totally. Beyond gender, yes. Beyond any concept of duality, beyond our capacity to understand or articulate.
Yeah. Which brings us back to last week's subject, which is we need something other than he, she or it.
Yeah.
And they doesn't work very well for me because it implies in a way that, well, it implies a plural, but I don't find that terribly respectful either. And again, we come back to the language. Mm. Oh, I'm just pausing looking at the bees on the clover. Isn't that beautiful?
It's heaven. Very busy bees.
Very busy bees.
Yeah, I have multiple problems with they because, and back to our, gosh, I wish I'd looked it up in the little gap we had. Those meanings where words mean, you know, more than one thing, especially opposing things, is that they and it are implicitly othering because
it is very much outside. It's them rather than us, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes.
There's a suggestion in they, well, either it's a plural, or there is a suggestion that there's a gang and whoever they are, they're not in it.
Yes.
Because they're not us.
And
they're
all
them.
Conspiracy theories are about they. Mm. They are trying to control us. Exactly. They, it's them. And
they tend typically to fall apart when you examine who exactly do they mean by they. But, yeah, so, and so that, I mean, I'm sure there's a world raft full of people out there all going, oh, for God's sake, Susie, just belt up. Because, you know, we can tie our knickers in any number of pretty infinite knots, probably, around trying to be exact in our language.
But I didn't think we use war knickers.
Did you not know that there is a beautiful bright orange fungus, which I'm probably wrong, actually, but I have always named as witch's knickers. Because witches wear bright orange frilly knickers. But no, most of us witches don't. Often wear knickers.
I'll
and
confess,
I don't have any bright orange ones either.
When I'm in skirts.
Yeah, well,
but that's from years and years of travelling around China and having to find somewhere to pee while there were men standing around.
Exactly. If you've got a skirt on and no knickers, you don't have any difficulty at all in finding places to pee.
No, you don't. Long skirt, that
long
is. A long flowing skirt.
Definitely,
yeah.
Yes. I would never go around with no knickers with a very short
I think
skirt
we were
on.
Talking about something very important.
We derailed ourselves.
Absolutely.
To the whole language thing is that it's not that I'm obsessed by having only one word and being incredibly precise. If I'm obsessed by anything, it's by the implicit and intrinsic lack of respect and inclusion that there is in the language as we currently use it, that is English.
Yes.
And that there are other languages and other ways of speaking in this world, alive, kicking, right now, some of them only just, which have a far, far, far more respectful and inclusive way of speaking about the world. And if I can achieve anything whatsoever in this little life of mine, I'd love it in part to be that we think more carefully about how we speak and we try to use our language to convey the truth of our knowing in our hearts that we are part of one great big living breathing being upon whom we depend for our very existence and that everything else that's part of this great living breathing beautiful being is therefore our relation and deserving of our respect and our love and our friendship and our consideration.
Yes.
And
you know, that shouldn't be that hard. No,
but it bloody is unlearned. In English.
It's been unlearned somewhere, hasn't it? Yeah. I'm reading Braiding Sweetgrass at the moment, and I am loving it. I love it much more than The Crone, and I'll tell you why I haven't loved The Crone yet, though I'm going to go back to it, because it's annoyed me so much I know I have to read it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I totally know what you mean.
But I'll come back to that in a minute. But Braiding Sweetgrass, and I can't remember the author's name.
Robin Wall Kimmerer.
Oh, it's the most beautiful book. It's got sorrow for the losses, and there's some anger for the losses, and that's absolutely right. She's of Native American Indian blood. But the writing is exquisite, and it's so loving, and it helps me love the planet more. Mm-hmm. And she calls them tree people or rock people, and I've started doing that because that just went straight into my soul, and I went, yes.
Yes.
And my benediction at night now, I go out and say, people of fire, people of air, people of earth, people of water, instead of spirits. You know, people, the running people, the swimming people, the creeping people, the crawling people, the flying people, the singing people, the dancing people.
Yeah.
You know, and it just feels so nice.
Yeah. Beautiful.
We are all the people.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should have a quest of having looking into other languages for a pronoun.
Yes. Well, I'm slightly on that quest. And in fact, if you are a dear listener who either speaks ancient Sumerian or, apparently, really good Portuguese, apparently, I may have been misled, but apparently, there are more than he, she, it, they, and them in Portuguese.
I have a friend whose sister lives in Portugal. I shall ask him.
Hurrah. Okay.
And but if you know, messages,
you know,
please do.
Yeah. And in ancient Sumerian, and I do have an inn in the ancient Sumerian department, so I can ask. There were way more genders, and maybe, and you know, God, there were in the Native American languages, as I know we've spoken about before. So likewise, if you know of words within the Native American languages that can convey this, that would translate accurately into English as what we mean, I would love to hear them. I know Robin Wall Kimmerer herself is trying out the word she. So he, you know, he, she, it, she, as a respectful word for...
she, yes, because it is the Chinese word for life force anyway, isn't it?
It is, but as a result of that, I wonder if it might be very confusing. But also, I am being ridiculous, maybe, but I just don't like how much it sounds like he. It'd be very easy to mishear as he.
Yeah.
Or even more so, she.
Well, it's a quest. Let's send the quest after the energy of the whirlwind to come back.
I'm being really stupid, aren't I? Now that I've said that out loud, he, she, chi makes far more sense.
Yes.
Let's pretend I just never said that.
I actually misheard you too when you said way more. I thought that was a North American Indian word for agenda. A way more. I thought, oh, that's appropriate. I wonder what the original is. Is she a male? Is that person male, female, or transgender, or what? They're a way more.
Way more. Yes, way more.
But then
than
I
you
did
can
do
never
they,
define
didn't
word.
I? They, way more is a way more. Oh, golly. Well, it's a quest.
It's a quest.
If we put it out there, let's see what comes back.
Yeah. And also, as I know have probably got your way to or are about to come to the point where Robin Wall Kimmerer in Braiding Sweetgrass is talking about the way that a bay is spoken of in the Potawatomi language.
No, I haven't got there yet. Tell
so
me, because
beautiful. So it's the bay is engaged in the activity of holding the water.
Oh.
It's an active thing to be a bay.
Oh, God, yes, yes.
Yes. And that is so, you engage with that bay.
Yes, I have got there. I'd forgotten
so
it. Yes.
So much more of a different way than you would engage with
but
the bay that's merely a thing.
That's what the divinity is doing. What Jewish mysticism teaches is that the divine is holding creation in every second. And if the divine should drop it for a second, it ends.
Mm.
Everything is recreated every single second.
Yep. I've got no argument with that. I would put it differently, but I absolutely don't have any argument with it. To me, the divine is in everything, holding yes. everything and in it.
Yes. Yes, you're pantheist, I'm panentheist, which is, oh God, it's ridiculous. It's just slightly different, and panentheist is acceptable in Christian circles, but pantheism isn't. And pantheism is all things are God. And panentheism is that God is the source of all things and in all things. It's just a very...
No, well, I'm a panentheist you too are, then, yeah.
Okay, fine. Because it's just such a slight difference. But I do think it's important that I'm trying not to other God. Which religion does all the time.
Yeah, ain't that the truth. What yeah. complicated, bizarre times we live in as well, that we should have to... sit here talking about how on earth can we communicate
who we are
accurately and beautifully yeah. with each other, even. I mean, you and I are so crazily on the same page, even though we are, you know, apparently using, again, what it boils down to, a different language to describe our experiences of very much the same thing. I think is, on the one hand, it's an amazing illustration of how possible it is to be on the same page and talk about the same stuff using different words, but also how ludicrously difficult it is, you know, what a position we're in the West, in the consumer culture, to try and find our way back to knowing ourselves as nature, when even the witches and the Christians have a tough time finding the words that don't
the Franciscans,
anything and everything.
Yeah.
You know.
So if we find a tough time and we're trying, what about those who...
Yeah, who haven't even thought about it yet.
Haven't thought about it yet. Yeah.
And you know, our conditioning is massively...
And as we say, words are wands, words are spells.
Words are spells, and we've been raised within this language of these spells since birth. Of course we have. We've grown up in the United Kingdom.
And we're also wired to wired into the negative rather than the positive. There was a good example of that, which has gone straight out of my mind. But we are wired.
The bloody newspaper doesn't sell on Prince Charles's birthday. It says that we're wired into the negative.
It does. There was another example there too. But let me just go back briefly to the book The Crone, which I will go back to. The problems I was having with her wasn't the anger. There's a lot of anger in it, and it's justified anger. But it's difficult for me to read because I was trained not to express anger, but so it's important for me to read it, and that's absolutely fine. The thing that had got me about it was a certain amount of what's known as the Mandela effect, which is she's made assumptions about religion which everybody makes but which are not actually true.
Right.
It's along the lines of the lion shall lie down with the lamb, which is nowhere in the Bible. It's the wolf.
Lions are lying down with wolves?
No, the wolves are lying down with the lambs, which is actually more relevant because wolves
eat lambs. Well, I guess a lion would.
But there aren't a lot of sheep in Africa.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, and that one's a fairly harmless one, but there's a fair amount of projection, and I see this with all sorts of people who have problems with religion. And God, I get that they have them. God, did I have them? And sometimes still I do. But this assumption that the Bible or the holy books say one thing because you've been taught that it does when it doesn't. And that's why I do what I do, which is go back to the source and say, well, what does it say? What are the potential translations for that? And my friend Adam and I have been talking because he's listening to this podcast. He's a Jewish guy and a mystic.
Bless you, Adam.
Hi, Adam. And he was saying that thing about and that humanity shall have dominion over the earth. And we were talking about stewardship being a better translation. He's gone into the Hebrew and he says, okay, this is difficult because the word is dominion. Mm-hmm. It isn't stewardship. The word is dominion, but it's a completely different word from, and I haven't talked all the way through this, so we have may have to come back to this another day, but it's a different word from when Adam is given control over Eve.
Okay, tell me about that.
That one I can't, he's going to one of his Jewish yeshiva friends to talk about the meanings of those two words in more depth, because there's
that's going
to
be a fascinating
always the possibility, because biblical Hebrew, the Torah, was written down after the diaspora, after the ending of the Jewish temple, where the Romans destroyed it in 70, in the Christian era. And all the... not consonants.
Vowels?
Vowels, thank you. All the vowels were written in and set in stone, and they were never meant to be. So all these words for which we have translations may have alternate ways of looking at them, alternate ways of reading. I mean, it's to say, and also the copying. There's a a famous bit in St. Paul where somebody actually misunderstood a smudge, which means good, which means and translated something as God when it was not God. So the phrase in St. Paul is Jesus Christ, God who makes all things. And it's equating Jesus with God.
Right.
Whereas the correct termination for Jesus is Lord, which is an aspect of the divine, the Christed aspect of the divine, but not the whole of the divine. And the phrase, there's a shorthand in Greek which means God. You just put the th for theos. And it was actually an O, an omicron, which got a smudge in it, and they misread it as God, and everybody else
copied that down.
But it's basically Jesus Christ, who through the Christ can make all things possible, which is different from Jesus Christ, God,
makes all things possible. Definitely. Big difference.
And it's all the, but it's these tiny subtle things which are known as the Mandela effect, which is, it's all basically Chinese whispers.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love Kabbalah, because it's got these structures, and if it doesn't hang correctly on the structure, which is the pattern of the universe.
Yeah, you know it's
you off. Know it's out. It's yeah. just out half an inch or something, and half an inch can be more serious. I often say to people who come for any form of healing session with me, yes, it is a serious problem because you're only half an inch out. And it's far more challenging to correct the half an inch than it is when something is glaringly out.
Yeah. Wow.
So, but it's back to words and spells again, isn't
it? Back to words and spells. It's always back to words and spells. And therefore, you know, perhaps that's us. Perhaps we're just half an inch out. Not maybe you and me, but maybe even as a culture.
Yeah.
Maybe we're only half an inch out. It's easy to see us as being way off. But if we're half an inch out and our half an inch is partly, it's so hard to see and so hard to rectify simply because we don't have access to, well, that's not true. We do have access to, but we don't as a culture, most of us, I don't know, I'm making massive assumptions about what the rest of the world is up to, but what I see is that most of the rest of our culture doesn't know that it's being confined by the language that it speaks and indoctrinated by the very language that it speaks.
Do you know we do, because we project that onto government.
Yeah. Yeah.
We do know we're being controlled, but we don't realise that it's subtle it is. Because when I get a little bit knocked when people go, oh, the government's trying to control us with masks and with this and with that and the other. The government's been controlling us with speed limits for a very long time.
Yes.
And most people agree that that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always this thing of when is it across any line?
Yeah.
And that comes back to the system. You know, the system is the system. It becomes evil when you turn it into a good thing. Whereas it is just what is necessary at the moment. So we are such a, I think, yes, we are half an inch out, because if you think about it, if you've got I had a beautiful silk skirt once which got a tear in it because silk would do that, but it was so close to the edge that you couldn't turn anything in on it. Mm-hmm. So that was far more difficult than if there'd been a tear higher up, because I could have taken something from the underdress or something and patched it.
Yeah. And it makes me go back. I mean, it's made me go back to our discussion about the little white horse and Mariah. That
this is the book by Elizabeth Googe. If you didn't listen last week,
so
it's the most beautiful, magical, mystical children's book that both Christians and witches can read and be satisfied with, because it melds the nature world with Christianity so beautiful.
And also, you have to, for heaven's sake, don't read it not understanding that it was written in 1948 and times were different.
Yes.
You have to cut it a bit of slack.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this go, what am I trying to say? What I'm trying to say is that as beings on this planet, we do massively co-create with the divine our own reality. And that consensual reality is made up of all those individual co-creations. And yes, we're controlled by government, and yes, by the time you listen to this, you're going to be having to wear a mask if you want to go shopping, just like you have to not exceed 70 unless you want to be nicked on the motorway and, you know, can't park on the double yellow lines, blah, blah, blah. But that, within that, you have an opportunity on a daily basis to be anything from an absolutely obedient, even subservient, unthinking, uncaring, disconnected little creature who just does as they're told and whose reality is of utter separation. I mean, that's I'm making a leap there between being, I'm joining the dots between being obedient, being unthinking and caring and subservient, and that's incredibly unfair. I'm sure there are lots of people who are profoundly obedient to all sorts of things who care deeply. I hope that you see what I'm trying to say in amongst the broad brushstrokes.
Well,
that we can be really, really, really part of the system with massive blinkers on and be in a reality which we believe we have no control over. Mm. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, you know, potentially people who are so away with fairies as to be, you know, kind of psychotic in their in their non-participation in consensual reality.
Yeah.
And then between those two places, there is such an enormous scope for us to be the hero in our own story. So like the little girl in
the little white horse.
In the little white horse. And indeed like the little wooden horse in the little wooden horse story that I thought you meant the first time you said that. We've got more control than we think we have over our own reality. Because apart from anything else, it's up to us what the filter is that we put on the motivation, the cause, the effect of any and every thing that happens to us.
Yeah.
So last week you came to a place whereby you could see that your beagle being kicked by a horse could be an act of grace on behalf of the divine to bring that dog and you to the moment of a beautiful death rather than months of torment.
Yeah.
That any one of us in any given moment can choose to see any of the things that are happening in our world through any kind of a filter, from, you know, the most grotesque form of bullying and control to the most beautiful gift. What, and part of this is what do we perceive as being the motivation? You know, if we, just to go into government for a minute, if we perceive the government as being a thing that we can trust, run by good, honest and fine men who are only out there trying to look after our best interests in the best way that they can and listening to our voices, then we'd all, I'm sure, run to buy a mask straight away. And if we think on the opposite end of that spectrum that the government is a bunch of criminals only out for themselves, making the most use of the public good to line their own pockets they possibly can and not really giving a shit about the rest of us, then we might have questions about that. And I'm not necessarily on either of those extremes, and it doesn't really matter what I think anyway, because what I think in the end is going to be part of what co-creates my reality, and then it's up to me, how do I respond to that, and what do I make it mean in my world?
That's exactly responsibility, ability to respond. We have the other ability to respond, which is life-giving, or react, which is death-giving.
Yeah.
And we will always react. One does react. It's whether you pull it back afterwards and go in. There's a Christian teacher, Catherine Ponder, from Unity Church, in America, and she was the person who introduced me to Unity, which is one of my places of inspiration. And she wrote a lot of books about prosperity. And she says the most powerful affirmation that she's ever used around changing things into prosperity is the one, I can hardly wait to see the good that comes from this. And I learned to say it when anything really awful happens. It's, I can't wait to see the good that comes from this. You have to say it through gritted teeth sometimes. Oh boy, do you.
Oh,
but
no.
It gives you the ability to say, okay, there's a wider picture here.
Yeah, sorry.
There
is suicide in my tea.
Oh. You just murdered a fly, I don't know.
astonishing. No, it's all right. Is it? Was it a ladybird?
No, it was indeed a fly, not a bee. It's okay. A little head, and it's murdered itself, I'm afraid. It made a very hot tea. Sorry to derail that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, okay. Let's just not assume that somebody's out to get us.
Uh-huh.
Because we assume that God's out to get us. We're taught in Christianity and in Islam, and in certain spent in Judaism, that God's out to get us. God's watching what we're doing in bed. God doesn't care whether we've got a bed to do it in, but what we're doing under the covers is God's concern. No.
Yeah.
You know, it's we've got to learn to... We haven't got to do anything, but the response is so important. Say, okay, there's a bigger picture here. Something is happening here, maybe. And the other thing I really want to say about this government controlling you and the conspiracy theory thing, and I've said this to some of my comedian friends, and they've taken it better than a lot of my holistic friends.
I'm intrigued. Come on, what is it?
It's basically we have chosen to live on the fringes of society.
Us lot. Yeah.
And the comedians.
Right, yeah.
We have chosen not to live fully in that system. We do not have everyday jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We are freelancers. We go where we're wanted. We are the Waldenese's of legend, you know, who went round with the tarot to teach the great teaching under the guise of playing cards. I don't know if that's true, but that's a legend.
Yeah.
So we have chosen to live on the fringes of society, so there's no point in complaining about a government that can't see us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and not only can they not see us, they're not particularly interested in
us. No,
this,
they're not, and we not... don't want them to be,
no,
frankly.
Indeed, yes. No, I don't want the government to be remotely interested in me. But also, it... Well, I don't know. I mean, that it is and it isn't true. What I was about to say was, we are a tiny minority, and the government is not that bothered by tiny minorities, no. It seems to me, which, on the one hand, is... terrible,
yes,
because we are part of the country,
yes.
And so they should be at least a tiny bit bothered by tiny us. But on the other hand, you know, that's a pretty sorry kind of statement to be able to make, because actually we humans, on the one hand, we're all just humans, and we are that one tribe of humans, and we have far, far, far more in common than will ever divide us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also able to be boiled down into tiny minorities.
Mm.
And because government or anyone interested in a kind of divide and rule type of way of behaving can boil us down into tiny minorities, we can then be divided and, what's more, ignored.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can't accurately render this story, unfortunately, but there's a lot of information going around at the moment around the basic statement, how come the Irish aren't black? And that back when the Irish didn't become black, if you see what I mean, and I mean black in a
pejorative way, as in...
Yes, in a pejorative way, exactly.
Yeah.
As if, oh heavens, so to begin at the beginning, there was a time when those at the bottom of society... were coming together in terms of lack of opportunity, lack of respect, lack of financial security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Irish were down there with the majority of the black population in, I don't know if it's more than in England and in America, it probably is. But anyway, they were starting to get together and starting to make trouble. And so the Irish... and the blacks, which, as far as I understand it, hadn't been named as a separately you're different. It was all like the poor people.
Yes.
And they were just the poor people.
Yeah.
And then they had to become the white poor people and the black poor people because they were starting to get together. So they were divided.
Oh.
I probably expressed that really badly. But
how interesting.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, that's what you
which
do.
Which divide and rule, isn't
divide
it?
And
absolutely.
Rule. And as soon as any population is getting big and disruptive.
Yeah. So basically the answer for anybody who's blaming anybody for anything right now is that you are stuck in division.
Mm.
Because once you're in division, you are cutting yourself off from the source apart from anything else.
Mm.
And when anybody comes along and says something that's prejudiced against any gender or colour or whatever, and then complains about the government, they're just expressing their inner division.
I guess. I mean,
no, it's nasty. It's really, it's very nasty. Yes, it's about, what I'm trying to say, because the words did not come out right at all. I was distracted by a beagle, says she, with no excuse whatsoever.
The fine excuse.
If we are afraid of being divided and ruled, our job is to unify. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely, yes.
So our work is unification at all points. It always was and it always will be, but that's no different now when we're being... feeling we're being divided up by government. Some people are getting money, some people aren't. Is that, yeah. So we actually have to unify. There was a lovely lady down the road from us who was applying for her £10,000 from the government because she has business premises. Mm. And she was saying that it was likely because she had business partners that they get two loads of £10,000. And if she did, she would give them to the second one to somebody she knew needed it.
Oh, nice.
But she didn't.
She didn't give it or she didn't get
it? She didn't give it.
Oh, ouch.
And that's such a possible source of division for that other person. And that could create a great big divide between them. Whereas the other person, fortunately, has been able to say, point one, she may have forgotten. Point two, she may need the money. Point three, the other person may not have allowed her to give her. And point four, how lovely that she thought of me.
Yes. Oh, that's a good person. No.
That's a good person. Yeah. And may she be blessed with all the prosperity the Holy One can give her right now.
Absolutely. Yes.
That grunt was because she was she's been climbed on by a beagle. It's 35 minutes. We've probably done enough for this one. Thank you again for listening to our burblings. We do enjoy them and we're so glad that you do. We've got our 1,000 downloads badge.
I know, it's exciting. I didn't know you got badges on.
Oh yes, nowadays they have to give you badges. Oh, badges are so important, aren't they? Bless you all. Thank you. See you next week.
Bye.